holding on, Kufchof Aleph Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom. Make that 12 lines from the bottom. One begins Mashkachsa. We discussed yesterday what we're discussing, what kind of edus is acceptable to say that a man's dead so his wife can remarry. We discussed the point Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava says in the Mishnah that if a goy is telling us that someone is dead, then we need, if he says it as regular edus, it's no good because we suspect he might be lying for whatever reason. Only if he's mesiach fi tumay, only if he's just, he's talking, and from what he says, we can deduce that what he's saying is that Pliny died, then we can trust him. So the Gemara gives some examples of Messiah Fitumai. Ki Ahuda Habaka Omer V'Ozel, there was a man, there was a goy once who was walking along and saying, Man Ika Bei Chivoy, he's calling out, is there anybody here from Chivoy's household? Shchiv Chivoy, Chivoy has died. Now, he's not saying it in a way of Eidos, like he's coming to Beis Din. Now, it's not like in the middle of a casual conversation either, but the point is, like, he's saying it in a way like he himself maybe doesn't realize the full import of what he's saying. He wants people to know that Chivoy is dead. It doesn't occur to him necessarily based on, or at least it doesn't seem like it occurs to him necessarily that it's got anything to do with being Matu, his wife. And sure enough, Rabbi Yosef allowed his wife to remarry on that basis, because we're saying the goy was not coming to give edus; he was coming to tell us a fact, and from that we get that his wife is dead. There is in that connection a machlokas rishonim about the details of that, whether in fact is it enough that he's just saying lafi tumay, or does it have to be actually that it's part of a longer statement, like here where he's calling out, is there anybody here from Chivoy's house, as opposed to if, let's say, for example, he were to show up and just say Chivoy is dead, would that be considered Messiah lafi tumay? As Machlokas who's showing him on that. I think the general consensus is that yes. So another example, Ahuda have a ka'amav ozel. There was a goy who was walking along and saying, "Vile the parsha zriza to have a b'pumbedisa." Woe regarding the brave horseman from Pumbedisa who was a yid. Apparently, there was only one yid there, and then Pumbedisa who was a horseman. So this goy is saying, "You didn't even know who this yid is." But woe for this brave horseman that was in Pumbedisa, the shchiv that he passed away, and also va'ansavar of Yosef. Rav Yosef, or some say Rava, allowed the Yid's wife to remarry on the basis of that statement. Another example, Hahu da'ava ka'om of Ozel, there was a goy walking along and saying, Man ika be chasa, is there anybody from Chasa's household here? Tova chasa, chasa has drowned. Omer of Nachman, said of Nachman, reacted and said, Ha'alekim, I swear in Hashem's name, Ochlo kavri l'chasa. Fish must have eaten chasa. In other words, if he drowned, then what would have happened to his body? How come we didn't recover it? Probably because the fish ate it. And midiburah de Rab Nachman azlo dvesu b'chasa ve'insava, based on Rab Nachman's statement. So Rab Nachman could have said, I hope he gets out safely. Instead, Rab Nachman jumps to conclusions that that chasa must have been eaten by fish. So chasa's wife went and remarried, and nobody objected to that, implying that it is allowed up yalof. Gilian Ashas over here brings a very interesting point from Chubas, from Hagois Maimonius on the Rambam. You also find them in the Mordechai and a couple of other Rishonim. An interesting point, yeah. An interesting point. Now, Rab Nachman is saying something that from which Chasa's wife is going to be mutter, fine. But why is he swearing? Why is he saying it in the form of a shvua, like Kim? Does he know 100% for sure that the body was eaten by fish? No. So Tragos Maimonius derives from that you can rely on Ruiv and such things. Now, when it comes to actually being mater the woman, we need a certain standard of evidence. We can't just say, I think he was probably eaten by fish. But he says, the Hagois Maimonius, when it comes to Shvua, a person is in fact able to say, Kufalaf Amud Bey is about 8 lines from the bottom. A person is in fact allowed to make a Shvua on something which is highly likely to be true, where there's a Roiv that it's true, even if he doesn't know 100% for sure, as we see in Rab Nachman's case over here. With that said, the Beis Halevi says maybe not. Maybe he's not saying it as a lashon of a shvua. Maybe he's just saying it as an expression of tzar. Anyway, so Amar Rav Ashi, getting back to the Gemara, Shmamina Hod Amar Rabbanan. Now we have to consider, where did this chassid drown? We learned yesterday about the concept of mayim sheyesh lahem soif versus mayim she'en lahem soif. You have a body of water where you can see all the sides of it. It's called mayim sheyesh lahem soif. And if a person drowns in it and he doesn't come out within a certain amount of time, then we know he's dead, because how could he survive underwater? As opposed to mayim she'en lahem soif, he might have gotten out someplace else, or the waves might have moved him someplace else. Now, this was mayim she'en lahem soif. And yet Rav Nachman is saying the fish ate him and his wife is remarrying and nobody's objecting. You see from this that when the Chachamim say that in such a case, the wife remains Osir, that's the Chachila, we shouldn't allow her to get married. But if she does go and get remarried on the basis of that there was a report that her husband drowned in Mayim She'en Lahem Soif, even if we don't know for sure, because after all, we said he could have gotten out, we don't force her new husband to divorce her. Obviously, if her original husband comes back alive, that's a different matter. But as long as he doesn't, then b'di'evit, we can say that it was fine. As we see over here, where we don't know 100% for sure that Chasa actually drowned and that fish ate him. Maybe, in fact, he did get out of the water someplace else. And yet, his wife married and nobody objected because it was a b'di'evit dika thing. Ikadamri. Now another version is Ansvar of Nachman the Devesu, that the reason why that the first version is just that she on her own went and got married and nobody objected. The second version is that Rav Nachman actually gave her a heter to get married, Omar, because he said Chasa Gavra Rabba. You say this Chasa was a great person, like we learned yesterday the possibility that a Talmid Chacham, because he's very prominent, then if he disappears, then we might say that in fact he's gone, because otherwise we would have heard from him, because he's well known. They were like the celebrities of those days. So in this second version, Rav Nachman is taking that view. Im isa the solid kol islam milsa. If he had in fact come out then alive, then there would have been a koil for it. So the fact that not means that he really is dead. But the Gemara says v'lo yehi, that's not correct. Loishna Gavra Rabba, Loishna Gavra Lab, Loishna Lab Gavra Rabba, doesn't matter whether he's a Gavra Rabba, whether he's a great person or not. Either way, Dievet Ein Lachatzila Loi, only be Dievet if the wife remarries on the basis of this, is it okay, but not Lachatzila. Okay, more examples of Messiah Chafi Tumah. The Gemara says, now who are Oid Kachavim to have a Ka'omalei Yisrael? There was a guy who was threatening a Yid. He tells him, Ketolas Pasta, cut grass or hay or whatever for strictly speaking, aspasta is not just grass in general. It's a particular kind of grass that they used to use for animal food. Anyway, the shodi lechevoy the shabsa and put it in front of my animals on Shabbos. He's threatening the yid and telling him, you better do this on Shabbos. The Eloi, and if you don't, katilna lachid katilna leploini by Yisrael. If you don't, I'm going to kill you like I killed Ploini, this other Yisrael, where I ordered him to do that and he didn't, and so I killed him. Da amulei, that I told him, bashi likder b'Shabbos. The goy says, I told this other yid, cook for me food on Shabbos. V'loi bashi li, and the other yid did not. The katilte, and I killed him. So therefore, he's threatening the second year, you better break your Shabbos and do what I'm telling you, or I'm going to kill you like I killed him. Incidentally, there is a discussion about this in a Tosfos in Sanhedrin, that's Tzeichen here on the side, regarding the whole matter of Yehorik Val Yaver. Was the first Jew justified in being Moser Nefesh for that? It's not so simple, because after all, on the face of it, the Goy is telling him to do this Lahana Osa. He's not telling him it as part of I want you to break your Shabbos. He's saying that I want a pot of hot food, and I don't care whether it's your Shabbos or not. And on the face of it, the other yid wasn't necessarily required to be Moser Nefesh for that. So it's quite complicated, the dinim of, are you allowed to be Moser Nefesh in such situations voluntarily? It's actually machlokas, but Rambam holds that not. Tosfos and some other Rishonim hold that yes. Anyway, that's how it was. Lamaisa, the first person was killed. And so now, or we don't know. All we know, the truth is, all we know, the point is why we're bringing this in the Gemara, is the only way we know that first person was killed was on the Goy's say-so. So now, Shama Devesu, his wife heard about this report. She came to Abaya to ask, is this considered Messiah HaFitumai? that this goy is saying that he killed Pliny, who is my husband. But on the other hand, maybe he's only saying it as a boast because he wants to force this other yid to do what he says, threatening him. But how do we know that he's telling the truth? So Abaye himself wasn't sure. Shehisa tlosa rigli. So he kept the case for 3 regalim. Now, what's the point of 3 regalim? So Rashi gives 2 explanations. One is that the Talmid Chachamim would gather each of the 3 big Yom Tovim to hear drashas on the halachas. So then Abaye figured when we have many Talmid Chachamim together in the yeshiva, during the rest of the year, you have to remember, you have the Rosh Yeshiva there, and then you have the few Talmidim, like, you know, whose parents support them while they're in yeshiva, or who they themselves are independently wealthy, and they can afford to sit and learn the whole time, but everybody else would go during the rest of the year and work, and they would assemble only at the times of the Yom Tovim. So therefore, according to the first explanation in Rashi, Abaye figures at the Yom Tovim, when there were more Talmid Chachamim there, then we'll be able to figure out an answer to this. So came Pesach, for example, and they all gathered together and they discussed it and they couldn't reach a conclusion. And the same thing with Shavuos and so forth. Rashi gives a second explanation that Rigli over here means the Yurtzeit of an Odom Gadol, of a Talmid Chacham. So they would honor the Yurtzeit by gathering together and by gathering together to his kever, and they would have a yeshiva there for the day in the schos of the nifter, and so therefore that's what it means tlosa rigli. So it doesn't mean 3 of the sholosh regalim; it means 3 of these yotzites. So again, many chachamim are gathering together, and still they couldn't figure out an answer. So Rav Adaba Abba finally tells the woman, she, the poor woman, is stuck there, not knowing what answer she's going to get. So he tells her, forget about Abaya, zil kamei de Rav Yosef, go ask Rabbi Yosef, the chorif sakina, his knife is sharp. In other words, he's not gonna dally over the question like Abaya. He'll give you an answer straight out. So Ozla Kameh, sure enough, the woman went to ask the Shaila about Rabbi Yosef, and Poshat Mehomas Nissen, and he answered it on the basis of the following Masnissen, the Rabbi Mishnah. This is actually Masnissa, it's supposed to be, it's a Braisa. Anyway, a Braisa says, if a guy was selling fruit in the market, he says this fruit is of Urla. Now, the point is, usually, many times, Urla fruit is of lesser quality than the fruit from a more mature tree. And in fact, the Ramban, I think, on the Pasuk says something along the lines of, that's why the Torah tells you that Urla is also, besides for the ruchnistic reasons, practically speaking, it's really not so good for you. But here, this is, sometimes you have, Rashi says, sometimes you have trees where the fruit from the younger trees is better quality than from the older trees. So here, this goy is claiming that that's the case. The question is, do we believe him? If we believe him, then this fruit is going to be also b'achilo v'hanah, because it's Urla. If not, then we don't have to worry about it. So if he says that, or shall azekahin, or he says that they are from azeka. Now Rashi gives 2 explanations. One is from his rebbeim that azeka means the word ozak means to surround an orchard or whatever with a fence. So therefore, it's talking about that this is during Shemitah year. So this guy is claiming that this fruit doesn't come from a hefker. This fruit comes from a garden or an orchard that had a stone wall around it and that was guarded during Shemitah. So now the question would be, are you allowed to eat this fruit or not? Now Rashi says, so what's the problem? Even you're not allowed, it's true, a yid is not allowed to guard his garden locked during Shemitah. He has to open it up and allow everybody to come in. But nevertheless, if he didn't, so he was over on that, doesn't mean that the fruit is also, Rashi says. So therefore, Rashi gives a second explanation that what it means that Azeka is actually the name of a city in Eretz Yisrael. We find it mentioned in a few places in Tanakh. So now the question would be, is this fruit in fact from, so now let's say this goy is selling this fruit in Chutz Laaretz and claims that it came from Azeka, which is in Eretz Yisrael, and where the fruit there was known to be high quality. So the question would be, is it true that do we have to take him at his word that it is in fact from Eretz Yisrael? Well, in that case, we'd have all the dinim that apply to fruit from Eretz Yisrael, Trumas and Maisris and Shemitah and so forth. Or is it maybe that not? Maybe he's just claiming it in order to advertise his wares in order that people should buy it, but it's not necessarily true. It may actually be from Chutz Laaretz. Anyway, as far as this question of whether you are allowed to eat Peiros Shavuos that were guarded during Shemitah, there is in fact a machlokes Rishonim about it. So again, we're saying Rashi's Rebbeim held that you're not. Rabbeinu Tam here and in other and in several and in several. So that's the thing. So Rashi holds that yes, so does the Rambam, so does the Ramban. On the other hand, Rabbi Natan in Tosfos over here and a few other places in Chas holds that no. In fact, if you did lock up your garden or your orchard during Shemitah or otherwise guard it, then you in fact would not be allowed to eat the fruit. And there are a couple of other Rishonim who hold this. The Baal Amor holds the same way as well. So it comes out to be a machlokes. The Poskim Achronim talk about Rav Moshe, for example, has a couple of tshuvas on the subject that it is in fact allowed. Up Alotha, we do follow. We can follow the majority, the number of, and it's not necessarily a majority. I think he says it is actually, but whatever. You can follow the Poskim, such as Rashi and the Rambam, who say that it is mutter. However, nevertheless, in Eretz Yisrael, there are people who are machmir. There are kahilas who are, in particular, I think in Yerushalayim, who are machmir on it and won't eat such fruit. Anyway, we're turning to the Gemara now. You're definitely not allowed to grow such fruit. You're definitely not allowed to guard your to keep your garden locked during Shemitah or otherwise be cultivating it or whatever. Right.
But if a non-religious person did,
that's what we're talking about. If a non-religious person did it, would you be allowed to eat the fruit? So it turns out to be a machlokas rishonim. Okay. Anyway, so continues the Gemara. So this goy is claiming then that his fruit is from Azeka, according to either from a guarded garden or from the city of Azeka, or shall netter of Ayahein, or he claims that comes of that's fruit of netter of Ayah, that fourth year of the tree. Anyway, loy omaklum, the Braisa says, in all these cases, what he said doesn't count for anything. In other words, we don't have to worry that maybe what he's saying is true. Loy niskaven elolash biech mechay. Because all he intended, evidently, was to make his to make what he's selling sound more attractive. So in those cases it would be Makel, and we'd say we don't have to worry that it really is Orla or whatever. In our case, then Rabbi Yosef is answering her by the same on the same basis. This goy is claiming he killed your husband. He didn't necessarily. He's just using it lashbiach mechay in order to strengthen his threat against the other yid. You better do this malacha for me on Shabbos, or I'm going to kill you like I killed Pliny. But not necessarily did he actually kill Pliny. He may just be using that he may just be claiming that in order to make his threat sound more credible. So the result would be that yes, this woman is not going to be allowed to be married. Maybe she should have stuck with Abai after all. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. On the other hand, to have an answer is better than to be in limbo. So yeah. Okay. Anyway. Onward. It happened once that a yid and a goy were traveling on the road. Later on, the goy comes and says, what a pity about this yid who was with me on the way and doesn't even necessarily know the guy's name. It's just like it's almost like he's telling over a story that happened to him. He died on the road and I buried him. And they allowed his wife to remarry because that's another example of Messiah. The Rambam, by the way, learns that it has to actually be, in order for it to be a valid Messiah HaPitomai, it has to be like in this story where the goy actually says, I buried him, but many of the other Rishonim disagree with that and say, no, it's enough that he's Messiah HaPitomai about the death itself. Another example, Vashuv Meiser, B'Koyler Shal B'nei Adam. It happened once that there was a chain of people. So koilo, literally, it's related to the English word collar, but it means a koilo is a chain that they would put around the necks of condemned criminals when they're taking them out to execute them. So here, Rashi explains that it was a whole koilo means chavura, means it was a whole group of people chained up like that. They were all on their way to Antuchia, which is the city of Antioch. Nowadays, it's in southern Turkey, but back then it was a big, important city. It was the capital of Syria. So these prisoners are all being brought there, the pashtos to be executed. And later on, a goy comes along and says, what a pity about this whole group of people. They died, and I buried them. Maybe, in other words, they died on the way before they even brought them to Antiochia to be executed. We don't know. Anyway, we see what Nishay say. I mean, again, the Chachamim allowed their wives to get married on the basis of that Eidos, because, again, it was Messiah HaFitumar. The goy is not intending to give Eidos over here. It's not like he comes in front of Beis Din and gives Eidos. He's just saying something almost like conversationally. Another time it happened that there were 60 people who were going to the Kaukum of Beitar. So Beitar, we know, is the famous city in Eretz Yisrael where Bar Kochba made his last, Ben Kuziva, as the Gemara calls him, made his last stand and fought off the Romans for a couple of years. Kaukum means a siege. So Rashi explains this was while Beitar was under siege, not necessarily the siege in the time of Bar Kochba, it could have been a different one, but whatever, there were 60 people who were going over there. And later on, a goy comes and says, "Chavala shishim bnei adam shoyim ahalchen b'derech beitar." What a pity about these 60 men who were going on the road to Beitar. They died, and I buried them. And in all those, and also the serious nishaseim, the chachamim of that time allowed their wives to be married. So these are all buried 60 people. I don't know, maybe he and his friends, whatever. Yeah. So we see from all of these cases that yes, if a goy were to come to Beis Din and say, "I want to give Eidos that Pliny died," we wouldn't accept it. But if he's Messiah Fitumoy, then we can say he's obviously not doing it in a way where he's trying to give Eidos. He's telling over something that happened to him. So therefore we can accept it. And again, as we said before, we have a machlokus we're showing him within that. It doesn't have to be like, what if he were to say only the fact? What if he were to say only that 60 people, that these 60 people died and I buried them? Would that be enough? Or does it have to actually be more like these stories in the Gemara where he's saying other things along with it? And like, so it's almost like muvla within it. Like,
can he say just 60 people?
Let's say if he were to be walking along and say, yeah, yesterday 60 people died and I buried them. Would that be good enough? Or does it have to be like we're saying over here that chaval on these people that are, you know, we're there, it's more saying a conversational. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, again, there is a considerable amount of Shilas Atruvas about the ins and outs of that. What exactly is the definition of Messiah Chafitomoy and when we can accept it? We know, by the way, that Messiah Chafitomoy applies in other areas of halacha as well. It applies in kashrus, it applies in other things. But again, the chachamim throughout the generations who've had to deal with cases of agunas have had many times to deal with the exact parameters of what Messiah Chafitumai is and isn't, and when we can accept what they're saying and when not. Okay, the Mishnah says, Me'idin la'uran ner, they can give edus on the basis of the fact that they saw the body by candlelight, or la'ur alavana, or by moonlight. We're not concerned that maybe it was too dim and they didn't see him clearly. We can also allow a man's wife to remarry based on a baskel. Now, we don't mean a baskel over here, like usually what it means in Shas, a voice from Shemayim. It means like an echo where they hear a voice, but they don't see the actual person. So, it happened once that a man was standing on the top of a mountain, but Omar, and he calls out, Ish Pliny ben Pliny, Mimokim Pliny mess. And he gives the name Pliny ben Pliny from such and such a place, died. They went and they didn't find anybody there. But still, that was enough evidence to be able to allow his wife to remarry. And we'll see a little bit about that in the Gemara. The Shuv Mice of Tzalmon, it also happened in the city of Tzalmon. The Echad Shomer, a person calls out, Ani Ish Pliny ben Ish Pliny, Neshachani Nochashvareni mess. I was just bitten by a snake and I'm about to die. They went there, but they couldn't recognize the body because it swelled up because of the venom or because it was a couple of days later or whatever. Anyway, but nevertheless, they went and allowed his and gave Eidos, and his wife was able to remarry because they had heard his voice identifying himself. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Bar Shmuel Tana. So in fact, we learn in a brisa, Beshamai ein masi in apibasko, or Beshamai masi in apibasko. So Beshamai says that these cases in the Mishnah would not work, and Beshilo says they do. Well, the question is, my kamash malon. Well, what's the chiddush? Masnesin he. We have on Mishnah telling us that it's mutter, and we know the halacha is like a stam mishnah. So why is it important for us to know? There was a machlokas Beshamai Beshilo about that. Fact is, the halacha is not like Beshamai anyway. And the answer is, Hok Mashmalon, what Rabbi Bar Shmuel wants us to know is the E Mishtakha Stoma, the Ein Masin. If you ever find a Stam Braisa that says that you can't allow a woman to be married based on a baskel, you shouldn't worry about, well, maybe we have to follow that. You should know Bes Shammai, you should know that's only according to Bes Shammai, and Bes Hillel disagrees, and therefore you don't have to worry that maybe the halacha is like that Braisa. Okay, we said, in the first case of the Mishnah, they went and they didn't even find anybody there. So in the second case, at least they found a body. They just they couldn't recognize it. But in the first case, we said they didn't even find anybody there. So the Duma shed have her. So how can we allow his wife to remarry? Maybe it was a shed who called that out. And he just sometimes shade him are malicious. And they may be doing that in order to cause trouble. The answer is, because they saw a form of a person. When they heard the voice, it's not just they heard a disembodied voice. From a distance, they saw somebody standing on the mountain over there. It wasn't clear enough for them to see. It wasn't close enough for them to see who it is, but they could see that there is a person standing there. Well, the question is, inunami damu. So what? Shadim can also take on human appearance. And the answer is, okay, they saw that he had a shadow. So the question is, the inunami islu bavoya, shadim also have a shadow. And the answer is, they saw that he had a shadow of a shadow. Meaning, you have, for example, when a person is out in a light, different angles of light. So you have, for example, there's a primary shadow, there's a secondary shadow, the shadow itself has a sharper part and a less sharp part. So they were able to see that. They just couldn't see who it was. The point is, shadim do not have a bavur de bavur. There's many places in Chassidus where it talks about the deeper idea behind that. Shadim represent here, as in many places in Chas, Kirchas HaTuma. And the idea is the Kirchas HaTuma have a shadow, as in the Alter Rebbe explains, for example, in Lakuta Torah, they have a makif, but they don't have a makif dim makif. They don't have a secondary level makif like Kedusha has. And in that sense, we're saying they don't have Bavoya to Bavoya. There's other places specifically where this makif to makif is identified with the Yechida. So a Yid has a Yechida, which is makif all of Milamayla. A goy and Kirchas HaTuma lack such a thing. They don't have that Yechida connection with the Eivishter. Okay, so the Gemara asks the Duma, so that's the thing. So the Gemara says, Vaduma who is who bavoya de bavoya. So how do you know? Maybe Shadim also have a bavoya de bavoya. Omar Abchanina, no. Omar the Yonas and Shida. The Yonas and Shida told me. Now Shida, like she says, there's two possibilities. Either this Yonas and himself is a shed, or it means that the person who was expert on Shadim and on how and on their behaviors and characteristics and whatever.
The
local demon expert. There is, in fact, there's a Gemara in Erevin also that mentions a figure called Yosef Shida. The Meiri there has an interest, it's talking about over there whether he keeps Shabbos or not. The Meiri there actually says an interesting idea that this was actually a human being, a Yid, who was careless with mitzvahs. He wasn't keeping Shabbos, and therefore they called him a derogatory sense, Shida, like he's no better than a shed. So conceivably, he might explain the same thing in our Gemara over here, that it means a Yid who's not Shomer Torah or mitzvahs like he should be. Anyway, this Yonas and Shida tells me, Bavoya islu, Bavoya de Bavoya, Lasu. Shadim have a shadow, but they don't have a shadow of a shadow. So if you see that this person standing there on the mountaintop has a shadow of a shadow, then you know it's not a shed. Apparently they were able to tell. Okay, the Gemara asked the Duma Tzara Havoi. Still, maybe you have another problem. It was a human being. Maybe it was her Tzara. We've learned previously that the Tzara of a woman, that the co-wife of the co-wife of a woman is not able to give edus on her, and we're always concerned that she may have it in for her Tzara and trying to mess her up. So here, she might be going onto a mountain over there, pretending and then saying that Pliny is dead, Pliny being their common husband, in order that word of it will reach her tzara, and her tzara will remarry, and then the guy shows up alive, and then she's in trouble. So how do we know that it's not her? And the answer is, Tana Dveda Bishmal, Vishasa Sakana, at a time of danger like this, where a person is his life is in danger, and he's about to die, Koisvin Vinoisvin, the same way as we find by a get, where you, if you hear his voice, you have, for example, Mishnah in Gittin tells us that you have a case where a person is at the bottom of a pit and he yells out, he says, I'm Pliny by Pliny. Whoever hears this, please write a get for my wife so that we don't have a problem of Chalitza or Yibum after I die. So then they're able to do it again, even if they don't recognize him, even if all they hear is the voice, because it's a Shasa Sakana, because if they don't, the guy's about to die. So the same way, they can write and deliver the get, even though they don't recognize. The same way over here, since it's a shas sakana, that's where they're not going to have another opportunity. So therefore, we will allow it. We will accept that baskel and allow the woman to be married. We're not going to be choshish that it was the tzara. Obviously, if it was the tzara, then she has problems. But if it turns out that the husband is alive, but nevertheless, it is good enough evidence for her to do.
Guy
Let's say she disguised herself as a man there. Yeah, okay. Fine. Mishnah says.
So he's giving a klal, it's not.
So he's giving a klal that when you have a shasa sakana, then we don't have to worry about these niceties of whether it might be that a tzara is trying to mess her up. We can assume that 99% of the time, it is in fact the person himself, not some prankster or whatever, and therefore, yes, and therefore that's valid enough, Avis. Or even a shed, we said you have to see Bavoya to Bavoya. Okay. Mishnah says, so now we've been talking all this time about the idea. We talked all the way back in the 10th parak about the idea that one aid is enough to allow a woman to remarry. So now let's discuss that point. When I went down to Nahauda, which is in Bavel, to declare an Ibuyur. Now, normally you're only allowed to declare an Ibuyur in Eretz Yisrael. What happened was, at this point, the Romans, there was terrible Roman persecution in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore Rabbi Akiva had to leave Eretz Yisrael and go to Nahadah in order to arrange this. The Gemara in Brachas explains it was only allowed, it only worked because Rabbi Akiva was the greatest caliber Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael in his times, and once he left, there was nobody equal to him, so therefore he was able to do that. Had there been others like him in Eretz Yisrael, then he still wouldn't have had the authority to do it outside Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, so Rabbi Akiva says, Matsasi Nechemya Ish Beis Dli. I met up with Nechemya from Beis Dli. Omerli, he says to me, Shamaiti Shem Masina Seisha Beretz Yisrael Al Pia Dechad Ela Yehudim Ben Baba. I have heard that the only one of the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael who allows a woman to be married based on the statement of one aid is only Yehudim Ben Baba. Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, it says on the side, but Bapashtus, we could say that this Nechemya Ish basically is a chaver of these chachamim, and therefore he's allowed to call him without his title. Anyway, so I heard that he's the only one who allows it. V'nu meisi loy, and Rabbi Akiva says, I said to Nechemya, Kein advarim, yes, that is so. He's the only one. Omerli, so Nechemya Ish basically tells me, Emor lahem nishmi, tell the chachamim in Eretz Yisrael in my name when you get back. You know that this country is all in an uproar because of troops of soldiers. There's a war going on, or there's raids of soldiers going on, or whatever. Earlier on Daf Kuf Tesvav, we learned two possibilities what he means by making that statement. One is that even if there's soldiers all over the place, still he's going to go on to say that one aid is enough. Or the other possibility, Rava said there in the Gemara, is just that Nechemya is saying, practically speaking, I would come and give this following aiders myself, except because it's dangerous to travel because of the soldiers, then therefore I can't, but I want you to give over this message in my name. According to either version, by the way, we see also, by the way, the Mesiras Nefesh of Rabbi Akiva, that he's not worried about this Medina Meshubeshes Begayosis, and he's going to accomplish what needs to be done. Anyway, so Nechemya tells Rabbi Akiva, "Mikublani Mirim Gamliel Azokin." You should know that I have the Kabbalah from Mirim Gamliel Azokin from a previous generation. Shemasi and Aseisha Al Piyed Echad, that you can allow a woman to remarry based on the testimony of one aid. So don't think Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is a das yochid in that. You should know that he's supported by Chachamim of the previous generation. So Rabbi Akiva continues, "Hashubasi v'utseisi advarim lifnei Rabbi Gamliel." When I came and told over this statement to Rabbi Gamliel. This is Rabbi Gamliel the Yavne, the grandson of Rabbi Gamliel Azok. Samach l'dvara, he was happy to hear what I said. But Omar, he said, good, matzinu chaver, l'Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. We found a colleague for Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Now he's not only a das yachid. Now we know that there is a solid basis. There's a more solid basis for this opinion. And the Mishnah continues, mitoich hadaber, as they were talking about this, nizka Rabbi Gamliel, shenergu arugim tel arza. Rabbi Gamliel remembered that many years earlier, there had been Jews killed in a place called Tel Arza, and that Rem Gamliel, meaning Rem Gamliel Azokin, had allowed their wives to be married based on one aid. So in other words, so now we may be talking about something that happened 50 or 60 years earlier, and all this time Rem Gamliel Azokin, Rem Gamliel the Yavne had forgotten about it. It might have been, sort of showed him as an interesting discussion about this point. He identifies this Harugim Batel Arza with a story that Josephus says that took place about 20 years before the Churban, where some Jews were passing through areas inhabited by Kusim, and Kusim killed them, and there ended up being a whole cycle of violence over there that for a while the whole Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael was in great danger. Anyway, so now we're talking maybe 50, 60 years later, and Rabbi Gamliel the Yavne was only a boy at the time, so he knew in a general way of the story that happened. happened. We didn't remember all the details. Now, all these years later, when Rabbi Akiva tells him what Nechemiah Ish Beis 3 said in the name of his grandfather, Ram Gamliel Zaken, then he remembered, you know what? It's true. They did allow them to remarry at that time based on only one aid. V'huchzeku, so now that became the halacha, and so they developed the chazaka. Lias masi an aid mipi aid. Not only would they allow one aid, but they'd even allow one aid that's saying hearsay from another aid, even though such things are usually not accepted in halacha. Mipi eved mipi isha mipi shivcha. Or even if the aid is hearing it from an eved or from a woman or from a shivcha. So nevertheless, we still believe this hearsay aids. Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua still stick to their opinion and say you can't allow a woman to remarry based on one aid. Rabbi Akiva says, I agree, one aid, fine, but you can't do based on a woman's aidus or an eved or a shifcha or relatives. They have to at least, the one aid has to at least be a kosher aid. Now, the halacha is not like any of those. The halacha in the end is what we're saying, the v'huchzeku, that in fact, all of the ones, one aid, whether kosher or apostle, a woman, an eved, etc., and even hearsay from them is believable. The poskim talk about, also, when we talked about a goy, Messiah HaPitumai before, that it could even be the goy was Messiah HaPitumai to another goy who now comes, and a Messiah HaPitumai to us, then that's also acceptable. So the Gemara asks, "Savar Rabbi Akiva al pi isha loy? You're telling me Rabbi Akiva would not allow the aidus of a woman for her that her husband's dead? V'hatanya Rabbi Shimon alazo oimer mishum Rabbi Akiva isha nemenes lahavi gita mikava choymer. We allow a woman to bring her own get from the Dinas Hayam. Now usually when a person brings a get from the Dinas Hayam, we learn at the beginning of Gittin that the person who's bringing it has to be able to declare v'fane nichta v'fane nechtem, it was written and signed in my presence. So in other words, it's not just a matter of her being delivering the get, she has to say a statement of edus v'fane nechta v'fane nechtem. And so as you would think that a woman should be kosher for that, like a woman is usually kosher for eidus, we say that no, she is kosher. And Rabbi Akiva says, "Akav chaimer uman noshim sh'amar chacham ein nemanas loyim mes baila." Madach, the women who the chachamim said we don't believe them to say that the woman's husband is dead, as we learned previously, her tzara and her yavama and her mother-in-law and so forth, all people who might have it in for her and might be davka trying to mislead her, all of those nemanis lahavigitehen, we still believe them to bring the get, which we learned this the other day, because fundamentally we're relying on the get, that b'fana nechtam is only a takana of the chachamim. So Zushin and Manaslam and Mes Baila. So then when here where the woman herself is believed to say her husband is dead, because as we've been learning all this time, Isha Daiko Minsava ain't a dinch and menis lahobi gita. So that how much more so we believe her if she brings her own get. So now the implication is Noshim Shamuhamuhudalaimahabdi. So what is Rabbi Akiva saying? The five women who we say that they're not allowed to give aidus for her, we said the other day in the Gemara, really it breaks down to seven because you have a couple of them are bilateral relationships, but whatever. The point is that only those women do we say we don't believe them to say her husband is dead, Isha Ba'alma Mahemna. But the implication is that another woman would be believed. So how can the same Rabbi Akiva be saying in our Mishnah that you can't believe Aidus Isha? And the answer is like Kasha, Kan Kodim Shech Ziku, Kan Acha Shech Ziku. Our Mishnah is telling us that there were different stages in it, where originally they said, originally only Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava said that you can allow them to marry based on Eid Echad. And the other Chacha, and we said eventually Nechemiah Ish Beis 3 informed them that it's not so, that Ram Gamliel Azaken said the same thing. And they accepted that the halacha is that one Eid is enough. And that in so at that time they also so the Mishnah says that hechziku they developed a chazaka to allow a woman and an eved and so forth. So originally Rabbi Akiva held like he says in the Mishnah. Afterwards he changed his mind when hechziku, then he changed his mind and said that we can accept edus isha. Nevertheless, though, we still can't accept from these five or seven women who are choshered on messing her up. Okay, so the Mishnah continues omru loy. So Rabbi Akiva is saying that you can't accept edus from a woman. But the Chachamim said to Rabbi Akiva, not so. It happened once that some Levim went to Tsoyar, the city of palm trees. Tsoyar is south of the Dead Sea. So we know, there were the five cities of Sodom. Four of them were overturned. Tsoyar was left. And in later times, it had a Jewish community. So these Levim went to Tsoyar. V'chola echad mehem, one of them became sick. So they brought him to an inn to recover. Then they went, they continued on their trip. When they came back, they asked the innkeeper, the woman innkeeper, where's our friend? And she said to them, he died and I buried him. And they allowed his wife to be married on the basis of that edus. So the Chachamim say to Rabbi Akiva, shouldn't a kehenes be at least as trustworthy as a pundikis, which the Gemara is going to explain at the top of the Amud on Amud Beis, that this pundikis was a goita. Now, why are we calling a Jewish woman a kehenes? So it means, in other words, so we mean a bas Yisrael, even what we mean. In other words, when you think of it, most Jewish women would be allowed to marry kohenim. So in that sense, almost any Jewish woman is roi to be a kehenes, to be a wife of a kohen and be able to eat truma. So shouldn't you trust them at least as much as you trust a pundikis? So how can you say that you can't accept Eidus Isha? And again, now we said in the Gemara, even Rabbi Akiva himself changed his mind, but we're talking about this discussion happened before that. So Amalahu, so Rabbi Akiva answers the Chachamim, when she'll be like this pundikis, then we'll believe her. In other words, it wasn't that she actually gave Eidus, which then Eidus of an Isha would be also, it's rather it was Masiach HaBitumai, and she had and she had physical evidence to back it up. Namely, HaPundikis HaTzilahem Maklev Tamilah B'Sefer Torah Shariah B'Yadah, she took out for them his walking stick and his bag and the Sefer Torah that he was carrying. So therefore, they were able to identify based on the simonim that these are his thing. Now, we learned a few days ago in the Gemara that simonim on kalim, on personal effects, are not always reliable because a person might lend them out. But here, we're not saying a person is not going to lend out all three of these things. He might not lend out any of them, especially, for example, his own personal Sefer Torah or his walking stick that he actually uses to walk around. So therefore, they could rely on that, says Rabbi Akiva. So it wasn't that we're relying on Eidus Isha at all. There, it's number one, Masiach HaBitumai, and number two, there were physical objects to back it up. But no, but otherwise, you would otherwise not necessarily would Eidus Isha be acceptable. So the Gemara asks, my griusa of the pundikis, what's so bad about the pundikis that the Chachamim are saying, boy to hey kehenes pundikis? The Makshin is assuming that the pundikis herself is a Jewish woman. So then it's one Jewish woman like another. Why the expression loy tehe kehenes kepundikis, as though like a pundikis is a lesser quality? And the answer is amen afkahana pundikis everes kechavim haisa, because it was a goito innkeeper. Umesicha lefituma haisa, and she was again being mesiach lefituma. Zem makle bezer tamula bezer kevesh krautik boy. She said this is his walking stick, this is his bag, and here is the caver where I buried him. The same thing. It was a goyish woman innkeeper. So it's all Masiach HaFitumai, and therefore we could accept that. Well, the question is, what do you mean it's Masiach HaFitumai? They asked her to begin with, where is our friend? Masiach HaFitumai would be where they volunteer the information on their own, not when you ask them, where then we have the chashash that they might be lying. And the answer is, there's a part before it. Kiven de chazisinu, when she saw them coming back, bachia, then she was crying. So now, when she was crying, omrula ye chaverenu, what's the matter? Where's our friend? Then omrula hem mesu kumartiv. So it's still considered mesiach habitumai because she started to say, to express what she was going to say with the crying even before they asked her. So that can be considered mesiach habitumai. Which the poskim learn from this, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that it means when a goy is Masiach HaFitumai, like all the examples that we had before in the Gemara, it's fine to then go and ask them for the details. So for example, we had, let's say in the Gemara over here, you know, you had the goy who said, what a pity about those 60 people that they died and I buried them. So now we can start asking them details. What day was it? And where exactly on the road to Antuchia was it? And so on and so forth. Because at least the basis of it is Masiach HaFitumai. So therefore, now we can assume the original statement was true. And now when we're ferreting out the details, then that's fine. I'll be able. So the same thing as over here. Okay, it happened once that a certain man, a yid, came to give edus on about a fellow yid who had been killed in front of Reb Tarfon. Reb Tarfon asked him, "B'ni, hey, how do you know? What's your basis for this edus?" Omar, so he says, Aniva hu hayinu hocha maderech. He and I were traveling on the road. A band of soldiers or bandits, or no, there wasn't really a great deal of difference between them in those days, whatever. A band of enemies started chasing after us. This person who was with us grabbed a hold of a young olive tree, and he broke off a piece, and he used that as a stick, as a gaius lachod, and he fought off the gaius, and they ran away. So I said to him, Arya, may your strength be increased, Yashakoyach, for saving us. And he calls him Arya in the sense, it actually says, you're a brave person, you have the heart of a lion. Amali, so he says, the man continues with his aders in front of a typhon, Minayin Atiyadesha, Arya Shmi, how do you even know that my name or my nickname is Arya? As a matter of fact, yes. In my hometown, they call me Yochanan, the son of Rabbi Yonasan, the lion from Kfar Shichya. So yeah, you punked hit on that my nickname is Arya. Well, now the man continues telling Rabbi Taufin, L'yomim cholo mes. Soon afterwards, this person became sick and passed away. The history of Taufin is history. So Rabbi Taufin allowed. Allowed this Yochanan, but Rabbi Yonasan's wife to remarry on the basis of this apes. So the question is, Rabbi Taufin, like boy Jewish of Hakira, are you telling me that Rabbi Taufin does not require interrogation of an aide who's coming to say that a woman's husband is dead and that she's muto to remarry? Strictly speaking, Rashi says drisha would be, for example, as the Gemara is going to give an example in a second, to make sure that all the details are accurate, that he doesn't end up contradicting himself. The chakiris would be the actual when and where did this take place? What exact date and time and place? So are you telling me that Reb Taufin doesn't require that? Once the guy says Yochanan Reb Yonasan, Aryeh of Kfar Shichya is dead, then automatically Reb Taufin will allow his wife to remarry? V'atanya, we learn in another braisa, a very similar story. Maisa ba'odim echad jebolif ne'rab taufin lahoyid edus isha. It happened once that a man came to Reb Taufin to give edus about a woman that her husband dead. Omalei bni heyach atei de edusu. So Reb Taufin asked him, where do you know this from? Omalei, and he says a very similar story. Aniva hu ha yuno hoichum baderech. He and I were traveling on the road. V'rodef acharenu gaius, a band of enemy soldiers or whatever chased after us. V'nitla b'yichu te'ena. He grabbed a hold of a young fig tree. And he broke off a piece to make a weapon out of it. The hechzer is a gaius lachorav, and with that he fought off the gaius and forced them to run away. So I said to him, Yashakoyach lion. And he says, you came very exactly to my name. So the man continues, L'yomim cholo mes. Soon afterwards, this Yochanan passed away. It became sick and passed away. Now, in the first braisa, we have that's it. Reb Taufin said, okay, we have our evidence. We'll allow his wife to be married. But in the second braisa over here, Omaloi, Reb Taufin tries to trip him up to see whether, in fact, he's telling the truth. He says to him, Loi kach amar to the Yochanan ben Yonasan de mikfar shichya aryeh. Is that... Let me get this straight. You told me that it was Yochanan ben Yonasan from Kfar Shichya, who's also called Aryeh, Omale, and the man says, Reb Taufin, loy, elakach amart lecha, Yochanan ben Yonasan, Aryeh de Kfar Shichya. So he's still sticking to his exact original version. The dictical of Shnaim or Shlosh Upamim, Reb Taufin tried to trip him up two or three times to see whether he's going to end up contradicting himself. Rekiven es dvarav, and every time he said the exact same thing, so we know that it's accurate. The he said Reb Taufin is ishtay, and then Reb Taufin allowed this Yochanan's wife to remarry. So we see that he required drisha v'chakira. So what is it? Does he require drisha v'chakira, or does it just once a person comes to Beis Din and gives eders, then that's good enough for us? So the Gemara says tanoi. In fact, it is a machloikas tanoi. D'tanya. Rabbi Akiva says that you do not need to investigate Eide Noshim with Durisha Vachakira. Once they give Eiders, then that's good enough. And Eide Noshim would mean not only as far as we're talking about over here, as far as to allow her to remarry based on testimony that her husband is dead, but also, for example, when a man comes with a get, when a person comes with a get, or other cases like that that involve changing the woman's status, then we say that we don't require, so one opinion is that we don't require Durisha Vachakira. Reb Taifin Oimer Boidkin. On the other hand, Reb Taifin says, you do need to. Rabbi Akiva said you can't accept Eidus Isha or whatever, but nevertheless, he says when you have a person who himself is a kosher aid, then you don't need Dirish Akira on him. With that said, though, Hagoyis Hagro does bring a different girsa that the Tanakama says, the anonymous Tanakama says that you don't need Dirish Akira, and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarifin say that you do. So switching Rabbi Akiva from the column that says that you don't have to the one that says that you do. And the Gemara says, the Kamiflagi b'Rav Chanina. Now, the underlying argument between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarifin, or between the Tanakama and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarifin, is based on what Rabbi Chanina says. The Amr Rabbi Chanina, Dvar Torah, Echad Dinei Mominus, Ve'echad Dinei Nefashis, B'Durish V'Chakira. On a Daraisa level, both Dinei Mominus and Dinei Nefashis require Durish V'Chakira. The pasuk says mishpat echad yelachem. The pasuk says there should be one law for you. So since we know by din and afashas that you need drisha v'hakira, and we learn that from various psukim and chumash devarim, so it would mean every kind of judgment that you do, including din and mamonis, is also going to require drisha v'hakira. Is also going to require careful cross examination of aid. Uma tam omru din and mamonis ein tzrichan drisha v'hakira. So Rab Chanina says. So why is it a mishnah in Sanhedrin tells us that din and mamonis you don't need drisha v'hakira? The reason is shalatino delas bifnei loivin, in order not to lock the door in front of borrowers. In other words, what's going to happen with Dusha Vachakira? There's a good chance that they're not going to survive it, that they're going to end up tripping up someplace during the Dusha Vachakira. And if we have to throw out their aiders, people are likely to say to begin with, why should I even bother lending money with Adim? There's a good chance that those Adim are not going to remember the details, and their aiders is going to be thrown out, and I've lost my money. So therefore, said the Chachamim, said that we don't need the Chachamim said, since in Dinei Mominus the Chachamim have broader powers, as we learned previously on Daf Tzadik, then therefore they said, but Dinei Mominus, we don't need Durish V'Chakira. And that way people will be more likely to lend money, and because they're not worried about that the Edom are going to be contradicted so easily. So over my committee, so now that we've established that, so now what's the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarifin? Marisov, Akivin de Ikksubal Mishkan. So Rabbi Akiva holds that since there's a ksuba that's going to be collected, because we know when there's Eidus Isha, when there's an aid coming and saying that her husband is dead, a consequence of that is going to be that she collects the ksuba. So therefore, kedinei mominus dummy. So therefore, we can consider it like dinei mominus, and therefore we don't need Durish V'Chakira. Well, Mar Sava, whereas Rabbi Tarifin holds, kibin de kashurin and Eishes Isra Alma. After all, we are allowing an Eishes Ish to marry out to somebody else, then kedini nefashis dummy, then it would be like dini nefashis, because after all, there's a chiyuv misa involved over here. So in other words, the question comes down to, so what do we consider eidos to be matu a woman? Do we consider it to be closer to eidos mammon or to eidos or to dini nefashis? Do we consider it closer to dini mammonis or dini nefashis? So there's several explanations among the Rishonim, and the Ramban and the Ra'ah and a couple of others that discuss the ins and outs of this. So one way of looking at it is, I mean, everybody agrees that obviously there is dinim nefashis involved, but one way of looking at it is that we look at which one, the Ramban brings a couple of possibilities, one of them being that which one is more common. It's more common to judge dinim mominus than dinim nefashis, especially nowadays, when we don't have dinim nefashis. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is going to draw an analogy between dinim nefashis, between dinim mominus and eidos isha, whereas Rabbi Tarifin is not. You have also a point that the Ramban makes another point as well, given that we learned previously that after all, the ksuba, the payment of the ksuba and the eidos that the man is dead go hand in hand. Only when she's allowed to remarry is she going to be able to collect her ksuba. So since we have the ksuba aspect of it, so therefore we're going to allow that to take precedence over the dinin nefashis aspect of it, kind of, and therefore we're going to compare it to Eidus, so we're going to compare it to Eidus Mamon and say that you don't need Dirish V'Chakira. And then there's different other explanations that the Rambam phrases it, that the Chachamim were Mekel in order that a woman doesn't stay in Aguna. So in other words, the Chachamim were given a choice which one to draw an analogy to, and they chose to draw an analogy to Dinim Mamonis, according to Rabbi Akiva. There's the Ritva brings from his Rebbe, the Ra'ah, a further discussion about this. The Ra'ah himself holds that the whole concept that we can accept one aid for Eidus Isha is actually Daraisa. So he so in keeping with that, then he understands that we're saying that on Daraisa level, that on Daraisa level we would say Eidus Isha doesn't require Dirish V'Chakira, and we'd be saying only that Rav Tirfin is still holding maybe we need to be Machmir as a Gzeir of the Rabbanan. Okay, the Gemara finishes off. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Chanina, Tamidei Chachamim Marvim Shalom Ba'olam, Tamidei Chachamim bring much peace into the world. Shenema B'chol Manayich, Lemudei Hashem, Rav Shalom Manayich, all your children, all your sons will be learned ones of Hashem, and great will be the peace of your children. And as you find in other places in Shas where this is brought, and as we say in Davening, Al Tikri Bonoich Ela Bonoich, that not Bonoich, your children, Bonoich, your builders, meaning the Tamidei Chachamim who build up the world. What is the statement doing over here? And it's in a, you actually find it at the end of four different Masechtas in Shas, whose initials spell out the word Banayich, Brochus, Nozir, Yevamos, and Krisus. So there's a number of different explanations about it. Marsha explains that it's a suitable conclusion for the whole Masechta. Throughout the Masechta, we've been talking about that there are times when we seem to override Dinim of Torah. We have throughout the Masechta, we said there was supposed to be Yibum, but Medirabonin, we're not doing that, and we're only doing Chalitza instead. Here we actually have, we just had now, where they're saying that one possibility is that Medaraisa, you would need Dirish, that we're saying that in Dinim Mominus, at least, you need Dirish of HaKira, and the Chacham are overriding it. So don't think that that's just that they're overriding the Torah for no reason. No, they're doing it in order to bring Shalom. They're doing it in order to bring Shalom into the world. And here, the idea being, in other words, that the fact that we're allowing, that we're going to make it possible for a woman to remarry, that we're going to accept Eidus, that her husband's dead, that she can remarry, that brings Shalom into the world, because it also brings that this way, she won't be an Aguna, and that this way she'll be able in the future maybe to have more children who will bring more goodness into the world and bring Mashiach closer. So therefore, so he says that's what this is doing at the end of the Masechta. Then the Oruch Haner talks about, he says that's very nice, but the fact is we find this at the end of four Masechtas. What's Marashah going to say about each one of those, why it belongs over there? So he goes, so he has a whole explanation about how there are four different aspects of Shalom. There's Shalom between, this Shalom, Bein Adam Lamakim, Bein Adam Lachaveroi, and so forth. And therefore, So it's Shalom on Lachaveira, he says, is Ben on Lamakim, is Brachas. This one is Shalom on Lachaveira. The one, there's another one at the end of Nazir, which has to do with Shalom Ben Adam Laishtai. And then there's one in Krisus, which is Shalom within a person himself. And then there's a famous Hadron that the Rebbe gave on this. The Rebbe originally delivered this Hadron in Tavshin Mem. And then it was Muga. And probably you can find it in Sefer HaSichos, Tavshin Nun Aleph. Where the Rebbe further analyzes this and says, after all, there's still some problems with the Oruch HaNer's explanation. Among them are that it doesn't seem like you have four different aspects of four different types of Shalom. It seems like you have four different aspects within one overarching Shalom. And so the Rebbe instead talks about that it relates to, we know by Kriyas Yamsuf, you have the four groups who were all arguing what we should do in reaction to the fact that the Mitzrayim are chasing after us. You have the group that says, let's fall into the sea, the one that says, let's return to Mitzrayim, that we should fight against them, or that we should daven. So each one of them, now in that particular scenario, Moshe told them, none of the above. You're just going to go and you're going to start walking into the Yamsuf, and it's going to split. But nevertheless, all of them came from a place of Kedusha. And so each of them represents a different way of working with the world and bringing Shalom into the world. So the Rebbe goes on at some length over there to discuss. You have Shalom Mitzad the Mashpia, that's the one at the end of Brachas. You have the one Mitzad the Makabel, and within that itself, you have two different ways. There's you fight against it and transform it, versus you work with it to transform it. So by the Jewish people, by the Yamsuf, that represents the ones who are saying, let's fight against the Mitzrayim versus let's go back to Mitzrayim and we'll transform it from the inside. So therefore, so over here, we're talking about the fighting against kind that you fight against Ra, and therefore it's reflected in the fact Now, what are we saying over here? Throughout the Masechta, we're saying there should be Yibum, which is going to be, you have the person passed away without children and meaning that he's not going to have a Kiyum in the world. So you want to be able to be Miyabim, his wife, in order that his Neshama should have its rest. Even if you can't, you still, at least you do Chalitza, which also has a benefit for the Neshama. And we're saying that with that, you transform, with that, you transform with a negative thing that happened to this person and you turn it into something positive. But now it's true that Chalitza, for example, includes a certain amount of friction between them. She's spitting on the ground in front of him, after all, as a bizarrian. But nevertheless, we're saying that ultimately that brings shalom to the world because you're transforming the ra in the world. And therefore, it also relates to what we just said about that the Chachamim overrode the usual rules of Eidos in connection with Dinei Mamonos, where again, the idea is that we're saying that you turn over the ra in the world and you make it that loitino delos b'fnei loiven. We want to make it that people will be willing to lend each other money and that there should be greater avos Yisrael and there should be greater there should be better and closer relationships between one yid and the next. And to do a favor for another yid as you're doing in this Masechta by doing yibum chalitza for the man's wife. Hadron alacha isha basra slick ala Masechta Yevamos.
One question.
Yeah.
We finish by saying Al Tikra Banayir Ela Banayir. It seems to be like the way it's formulated that there is a contradiction, but really we're not Banayir, we're not sons, but we're builders when we learn Torah.
We're both. In other words, the point is
That's my question.
Yeah.
Really, we are the true Banayir. The people who learn Torah are the real Banayir. The sons.
That
and of course, we are builders at the same time.
Well, that's the point. Why is the pasuk using the word Banayir twice? V'chol Banayir lebudashem v'rav shloimam. The fact that it says Banayich the second time is what forces us to darshan al tikri Banayich ela Banayich, that it means that it's both, that the Banayich really are, Banayich are the ones who are building up, meaning the Tamar HaChachamim.
Yeah, it should have been said in a different way. I think that it should have been said, you know, we are the sons also and the builders also.
Well, that's what we're doing. B'chol Banayich lemodei Hashem, we're the sons.
Al tikra Banayich.
What?
It says Al Tikra Banayir Ela Banayir.
But that's in the second half of the pasuk. The second half of the pasuk, instead of just repeating the title Banayir, is giving a new dimension of Banayir. But we still have the first half of the pasuk, V'chol Banayir L'modei Hashem. So we have now both. We have Banayir and we have Banayir.
Right. So what does it say, Al Tikra?
That's on the second half. Without the Al Tikra, you would have Banayir in both parts. Now you have Bonayich and Bonayich, that we have both. We're Bonayich and we're Bonayich.
But it should have said Tikra, Bonayir, V'Bonayir.
Al Tikri, don't read in the second half of the pasuk, Bonayich, your children, Ela Bonayich. In other words, you still have the first half of the pasuk. We're not touching that. We're only saying in the second half of the pasuk that Bonayich are really Bonayich.
It doesn't come out very clear.
Okay, I'm not seeing what's not clear about it, but that's what it is. In other words, we're saying that there's two dimensions of our relationship with Hashem. One is Bonayich, and one is Bonayich, and really they're both the same, which is why we have the very same word Bonayich in the second half of the pasuk is Daushin as Bonayich.
But really, it's one dimension because they can only be a Bonayich if there is a Bonayich.
Okay,
it cannot be one without the other.
Banayich, that's what we're saying. That's both represented in the same word. But we also have, there can be Banayich. It's possible to be Banayich without Banayich. That's in the first half.
Okay.
Okay. Baruch Tia. Mazel Tov, everyone.
Mazel Tov.